From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
And, you know, he basically said that Emmanuel Macron, who said that Trump was heading back to D.C. to work on a ceasefire, he said he was wrong. And then at about, I'd say, I don't know, it's about 8:50 Eastern time, at right around 6 a.m. this morning, he posted, "I have not reached out to Iran for peace talks in any way, shape, or form. This is just more highly fabricated fake news. If they want to talk, they know how to reach me. They should have taken the deal that was on the table. It would have saved a lot of lives." The conflict continues overnight with Israel and Iran trading some strikes, and we don't know how this is going to end. Howard Stauffer at the University of New Haven, he's got a ton of international experience, and he's been following this stuff for a long time and even lived in Israel for a stretch. He joins us now on Brian and Company. Howard, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and getting your perspective. I mean, just taking a step back, I mean, were you assuming that at some point Israel and Iran would go to war?
I thought it was sooner. It was an inevitable event. It's just I didn't expect it exactly at this particular time. I think what triggered everything was when the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, said it was very troubled that there was highly enriched uranium to 60% that was being sent to an unknown facility somewhere outside the scope of where all the known facilities for enriching uranium in Iran was located. And I think that's what set off the Israelis believing that the Iranians were, you know, trying to develop a bomb secretly and moving ahead despite the negotiations with the United States.
Well, that's the thing, right? They launched the first attack just before the talks were supposed to renew with the U.S. The U.S., you know, Israel says they were close, and U.S. says not really. And so it's hard to know what the truth is in terms of the timing of it. What is your opinion, or from what you see, why they did it at this point?
Well, I've been speaking to a lot of people who used to be my colleagues in the State Department and in the intelligence community. And many of them believe that the intel community by the United States was saying, I think this was what Tulsi Gabbard said when she made her testimony in March, that Iran was not close. But it was not close to not only developing 90% that you need for a nuclear weapon, but they were not close to being able to miniaturize the warheads of their current missiles with fissile materials or a bomb to be able to fire a nuclear weapon to Israel. So I think that might have been further out. But having a nuclear weapon means they could still have delivered it with aircraft, they could still have delivered it with a ship pulling into Haifa Harbor or Ashdod or even near Tel Aviv. They could have done a lot of damage if they had a weapon, even if they couldn't deliver it by missiles. So, and Trump basically said he didn't care what Gabbard had said to the Congress. His opinion was the Iranians were very close and that the Israelis also believed that and it was time to act. And Israel, and there's another reason why Israel acted, because you remember, not only did they principally defeat Hamas in the Gaza Strip, and they had totally destroyed Hezbollah in Lebanon and in Syria, but Syria's leadership had changed. You know, al-Assad had been kicked out. Al-Shara came in. The president met al-Shara in Saudi Arabia. So you basically, and the Houthis have been disarmed. So you basically have all of these actors who Iran has been fueling for years and years to fight against Israel. They've all been made inert. And after this exchange in April of missiles last year, they were basically able to knock out their SA-300, SA-400 air defense systems. So Iran was sitting there naked, you know, still making these audacious moves. So Israel decided this is the moment to act. Whether that'll turn out historically to have been the right thing or not, you know, is for another day. But that's why I think they did what they did on Thursday night.
Well, a couple of quick questions on that. The first of all is it's not like there's a bunch of other countries like Saudi Arabia doesn't like Iran either, but they're not like rushing to to, you know, pat Israel on the back here. It seems like in some ways the Arab nations surrounding him are, you know, even showing some empathy for Iran. And it just shows you there's just outside of the U.S. just not a lot of allies at all for Israel in that region.
Well, yes, the United States has been helping with several destroyers, and we're moving in a strike carrier group, the USS Nimitz, which has even better ability to shoot down incoming drones and missiles, ballistic missiles. Jordan has been shooting down missiles that have been flying over its territory, and I think the UK has been really quiet, but they've been also helping shoot down some of these strikes that were aimed at Israel by Iran. The Europeans have not, you know, normally the Europeans would have condemned Israel. They did not do that. They basically said, you know, we understand that Israel has to defend itself. And, of course, the Arab states have had a, you know, collective meeting, and they condemned the strikes by Israel. But privately, we have heard that, you know, many of them are very glad that Israel has taken on this burden, because certainly Saudi Arabia can't be complaining about the fact that an Iranian nuclear bomb might be pushed back or completely out of the picture. Same is true for all the Gulf states, you know, from Kuwait to the United Arab Emirates. And, of course, Egypt has also got to be very happy. So, and Turkey. So all of the countries that could have, if Iran had a nuclear weapon, Egypt, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia almost certainly would have developed nuclear capability, which would have made Israel in a much more dangerous neighborhood. And the whole world, because the Non-Proliferation Treaty of 1968, second only to the United Nations Charter, is one of the most important treaties we've ever had, you know, established, to say that 191 countries won't develop nuclear weapons.
What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
We're talking with Howard Stauffer from the University of New Haven here on Brian and Company. We're talking about Israel and Iran. Are you a little bit surprised that Iran, though, has been able to, you know, I mean, it's not often that you see buildings hit by missiles in Israel, despite all the ones that are lobbied their way. I mean, some have landed, which is sobering for a lot of Israel citizens.
Yes, I mean, Israel hasn't faced this kind of crisis since Saddam Hussein fired Scud missiles at Israel in 1991 during the Gulf War. And even then, it didn't cause significant damage in Israel. So this is waking up populations on both sides. Israeli populations are suffering, you know, relatively minor loss of life, although that is significant, any loss of life, and some damage. And, of course, in Iran, they haven't experienced anything like this since the 1980-88 Iran-Iraq War, where there were missile exchanges for 8 years. So this is a sobering moment for the populations of both countries. And interestingly, last night, the Iranians were only able to muster about 30 missiles to fire at Israel. Israel's been concentrating its strikes in the last 24 hours on missile launchers and drone facilities where drones are stored. And the reason they're not, and if you knock out the launchers, then you can have all the missiles you want. If you can't fire them, you can't use them. So I think that either that's having an impact, or this was just a relatively quiet night last night. But that doesn't mean that this exchange is not going to go on. It's going to continue for a while. And perhaps the president might be interested. He said he was not going home from the G7 because of trying to get a ceasefire. What he's trying to get is a deal that Israel and Iran could accept, where maybe Iran would not have the right to enrich uranium at all, but would be able to have a nuclear facility program to generate electricity, and the Israelis would be satisfied that and not being able to produce the Iranians not being able to produce ballistic missiles would make them feel secure for the very foreseeable future. I don't think that's going to be possible. President's mentioned that he might send Vance to somewhere to meet the Iranians, but the Iranians said they're not going to negotiate while there are still attacks going on.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.